Career Talk. I'm your host, Phil Perquette. It's a monthly podcast series brought to you by The Network, where we bring you internal and external experts who will share critical career advice for you, for your professional career. Even sometimes it might dab into your personal side as well. Our theme today is how to be unapologetically career ambitious. This theme actually aligns with our 2022 pillars, which really touches on executive presence and career management, all about the ability to inspire confidence, as well as your ability to manage your own career, be your own CEO for your career. This is especially important with the cultural shifts that we have had in our workforce. Today, I am excited, I am honored to have with us Aaron Walton. He is recognized as a trailblazer. He's recognized as a thought leader. He is the CEO and co-founder of Full Service Advertising Agency with offices found in Los Angeles, Chicago, Dallas, and New York. He actually partnered with Urban Magic Johnson, and their agency is known to be quite inventive, quite dynamic in building business relationships with brands, organizations like Lexus, Wells Fargo, Spalding, McDonald's, JP Morgan, Chase, the New York Police Department, and many more. He began his career as a marketing executive with PepsiCo, and he was promoted. And then he left PepsiCo and he started Aaron Walton Entertainment, which he sold to Omnicon. He was later named president of Omnicon's Radiant Entertainment Group. With him at the helm, the agency has won recognition after recognition with Black Enterprise, Out Magazine, the International List as well. And then Aaron and the agency is also frequently recognized with praise and accolades, such as receiving an advocacy award from Ad Color for his exceptional contributions to the LGBTQ community. He has also been named a Pride Legacy Leader. He was a recipient for the Ebony Magazine Power 100 list. He's on multiple diversity boards, including ThinkLA's Board of Directors as their co-president. I am honored to introduce to some and present to others Aaron Walton. Hello, sir.
Hello. That was a mouthful. That was a lot. This is what I get for having my mom write my bios.
Now, see, yes, you're going to set the tone. You're going to set the tone for how we're going to go this afternoon. Definitely informal. And I'm excited. And I know our audience is going to benefit. It's going to be just wonderful benefit. We're going to benefit wonderfully with your presence and your wisdom. So, fun fact. Okay. You know, there's a lot on Google. We can find out about you on LinkedIn. We can find out about you. But fun fact about you, I'd like to just set the tone with a, you know, informal question. What is your favorite beverage of choice? Mine is coffee.
Oh, well, this is real talk. Martini, Grey Goose, super cold, slightly dirty, blue cheese, olives, whatever you need. I'm there for you.
That sounds awesome. So look, that was a mouthful.
You can have your coffee. I'm not going to be a hater for the coffee. Enjoy your coffee. I love coffee too, but you're talking about my favorite beverage. Come on now.
Just for this moment, coffee is okay, right? Yes, okay, good. All right, good. Aaron, I'm excited to have you here. So let's just get into it. Let's dive right into it. You've had a wonderful career. Let's talk about our theme. Regarding the theme, what do you believe it means to be unapologetically career ambitious?
That is such a great question. Here's what I believe being unapologetically career ambitious really is. It is, you know, and I'll tell you from my perspective, you know, honestly, how it's worked for me. I absolutely love to work. I am one of those folks who, you know, just enjoys it. I don't make any apologies about it. I don't, you know, I understand the need for balance in your life and the need for, you know, having outside interests, but I generally like it. And for a long time, I used to feel like I had to say, well, I'm sorry, I'm working so much. Now I'm like, I own it. I feel that being in a position where you are pushing yourself and pushing others to move things forward, to move things up in a really progressive way that ultimately helps not only develop the staff. When you develop the staff, that's the first priority, because then all the other stuff starts to fall into place. You start to build the business the way you want. And you get there by pushing things that you genuinely believe are the right things for you. Doesn't mean it's always going to be correct, right? So part of it is being humble enough to be able to say, hey, we're going to make mistakes. We are going to push ourselves to the edge. We're not going to, you know, fall off the edge, but we're going to get really, really close. And we're going to give ourselves permission to fail, because if we do it the right way, we learn from it and we don't live in it, right? We learn from those failures. We don't live in those failures. And so for me, I look at it as a opportunity to say, this is who I am. This is what I want to be. Not everyone is going to get the trophy, although everyone deserves to have a right to reach for the trophy. They deserve to have the same opportunities to get that trophy. But some people are going to get it. Some people aren't. I want to get it. And I'm going to do what I have to do to get it. I'm going to do it respectfully. I'm going to do it with dignity and with honor and without leaving a trail of bodies behind me. But I want to do it. And I, you know, I think people who are genuinely curious, people who like discovering things, they're honestly going to be very ambitious, because you're trying different things. You're different stimuli, you know, get you excited about things. Different industries get you excited. So that's a long answer for your question, but I do think that it is about just being so focused and open at the same time to the possibilities and the things that you can really kind of bring into an organization that help other people see your vision and help you get there.
You know, it's interesting you said this. So I want to stay there and I want to ask you, so why in the world should I apologize? Why do people believe that they should apologize? You know, when you see, you ever seen someone say, you know what, I'm sorry. You said, what you apologize for? Why do you believe people need to apologize for being ambitious?
Here's what I would say. I think, first of all, we've put a negative connotation around ambition. I don't think ambition's really bad. I think it's actually quite good. And I think when you put that kind of negative, oh, he's just too ambitious, she's just too ambitious, it makes it seem like you're doing something to hurt someone else, or and that's not actually the case. I also think we're taught to be very humble often, and humility sometimes feels like it's getting in the way of saying what you want to do. And you know, we hear all the time growing up, right? Oh, you should be grateful for what you have. Guess what? I am really grateful for what I have, but I want more. And that doesn't necessarily mean more money. It doesn't mean more things. It can be, you know, more curiosity, more experiences that you get by not staying in the same spot all the time. So for me, being ambitious really kind of equates to being curious. And I think that that's a great thing. I also think that there have been marginalized groups for years, right? Women, people of color, people with disability, I mean, LGBTQ plus community. I mean, you can break it down however you want to look at it. And we have been put in a spot where we've often felt like, well, I don't deserve to be up there. And when they do let me get up there, I should say thank you. My position is I should be up there just like everybody else. By the way, not only should I be up there, I need to have a voice. I need to have equity in the conversation. And I'm not going to apologize for that anymore because I have something to contribute. I have something that you're going to benefit from. And by the way, I'm going to benefit from some of the stuff that you have as well. So it is a two-way street, but I think we're starting to get to a point now where people are realizing like, yeah, I'm not going to apologize for, you know, having or expecting to be treated and to be given the same opportunities that the dominant culture has had for years. And I think some of it is just habit. We say, oh, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, no, I'm not sorry. I've never done anything intentionally to hurt anybody. I've never done anything that I would suggest was trying to push someone back so that I could get forward. I'm just looking at the brass ring and saying, I want to get there. How do I get there fast? And how do I get there with a level of respect and dignity that makes other people feel good?
Now, that's the second time I've heard you actually reference with dignity. I want to be humble, but I also don't want to miss out on opportunity. So I want to shift on you a little. And one of the courses that we talk about often in our realm is branding. And I remember teaching branding, and I'm just going to ask you, when is it that they are over the top with branding? And they tell you in branding 101, hey, don't be shy. You know, you have to share yourself and do that. So when is it over the top? When is it, you know, you're not being humble anymore? And you might say, looking at it and saying, I don't know about this guy or that gal. What do you think?
Here's what I will tell you. I am a reluctant public speaker. I do it because, you know, it's part of the job of being a CEO. I think that for me personally, I want to be known more for the work that I do and let that work speak for who I am or the types of things that I believe in or the types of programs that I believe are the right programs for a brand. And so it's not, I don't really think about promoting myself as much as I think about, you know, let's talk about the work we've just done for Lexus or McDonald's, whoever it is that we're supporting. And that work should speak for the values of the people doing that work. And those values are ultimately the things that help define what your brand is all about. And so, you know, I try to stay focused on the work and hope that people understand that. I also, you know, for me personally, you know, being involved in doing a lot of philanthropic work, I'm on the board for HRC, I'm on the board for the Technonics Theater Company, for Yanni, for the Lines Ballet, and on the advisory board for the San Francisco Symphony. Mm-hmm. And all of those boards have very deep meaning for me and for the communities that we serve. And I hope that that kind of volunteer work helps to define what my brand is and helps define what I believe and how I want to see the world. Now, I'd love telling folks, look, our job is to face the world the way we want the world to face us. And that's not just, you know, how we cast ourselves. That's in our beliefs. That's how we carry ourselves. That's how we promote the client's business. That's, mm-hmm. you know, it's all very much tied to our core values. So that, I guess, is how I would kind of respond to that.
Okay, I get it. So this is really interesting. I would love to talk more about that when you're talking about a presence as well. Sometimes when you think about a presence, and I want to go to my next question. You know, when you think about gender, what are your thoughts on the differences between men and women when it comes to being ambitious, as well as for people of color? Is there a difference?
Well, I think men are often perceived in a positive light about being ambitious, and women or people of color are often considered in the negative. It comes off as a negative. Should there be a difference? No. We should feel that it is absolutely the right thing to do to celebrate a woman's ambition. And in fact, we should be doing whatever we can to help fuel that. The same with people of color. And I would say that we have an obligation because we have held it back for so long that the playing field isn't really level. And so for me and for the people that I talk to, I'm like, look, you have to understand the world we're living in and how we are facing, you know, our realities. It is not the same way that you are facing your own realities. I'm a gay man, and I have to also acknowledge that in my community, in the LGBTQ plus community, I have privilege that, you know, Black trans women don't have, that are getting, you know, hurt and beaten and killed in some cases. And so part of it is stepping back and having the ability and the honesty to say, okay, let me look at my privilege. Let me look at how my privilege is actually impacting in a negative way someone else, because if I'm impacting that person in a negative way, what ultimately happens, and you hear this, well, we can't cut the pie up too small. And my feeling is, well, if you cut the pie up in different pieces, mm-hmm. more people are going to eat, more people are going to be able to experience this beautiful pie, and they're going to keep coming back. So the pie is going to get bigger, not smaller at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to start to acknowledge those differences. We have to start to acknowledge that there is an uneven playing field, not just in terms of the types of hurdles that we place, and that ranges from stereotypes to budgets to, you know, just a range of things. And acknowledge that that hurts us, that hurts everybody. And once we start to acknowledge that, eliminate some of those obstacles and start to really do the hard work, which is uncomfortable sometimes because it requires change. Mm-hmm. Once we start to do that and we see the market expand, everyone ends up winning.
Now, that change that you're referencing, that really, when you think about it, it really starts from the nucleus, from the individual first. Would you agree with that? I was reading an article before we came on that talked about self-confidence and how women generally tend to lack in belief in themselves and confidence, which makes them more cautious. To your point, when a man is ambitious, yay. When a woman is ambitious, it might be misconstrued in some kind of way. Even from an ambition standpoint, women actually, internally, they lag behind in men. And women sometimes, this came actually from the Institute of Leadership and Management, where they actually set their sights lower. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's horrible that they're setting their sights lower. So that's my first thought. I would say that I can understand why it is, because oftentimes imagery that we see, the roles that we see,
traditional,
you know, and we were conditioned to some degree to believe that people fit in those certain roles. And after a while, you know, you adapt that type of behavior. The people who have the courage to collide, the people who have the courage to say, you know what, there's got to be a change. And I know that my talking about this way, I know that my pushing myself and pushing the communities that I represent in a direction that may not be comfortable for you, we're going to have to do that. And mm-hmm. you're going to have to get comfortable with that uncomfortableness, because life is going to change, and we're not going to be sitting back. I can see it. I can hear it. I can feel it. It's not just in the industry. It's out in the universe. People are tired of being marginalized. People mm-hmm. want their voices heard. They want to be really represented in the way that they believe that they should be, and not in the way that a dominant culture ideology tells you you have to be. And after some point, the pressure cooker gets so big, it's going to change. You have to be prepared for it to change. Let's get ahead of it and see the value of making those moments of collision real and beautiful. I tell folks this all the time when I'm talking. I want to redefine the word collide and think about it instead of a clash, although it can be. I think about it like a kaleidoscope. Okay. And when you look through a kaleidoscope and you see these beautiful individual, geometric pieces, they're beautiful on its own merit. But then when you turn that wheel and it collides and it turns into something even more beautiful and more glorious than that individual piece is. And so we have to have the courage to do that. We have to have the power and the voice to be able to say, it's time to turn that wheel a little bit, and maybe not a little, maybe a lot in some cases, and look at, what the new canvas is gonna look like. So
conventional, unconventional, when you think about, and I love that, I'm going to come back to that point, turning the kaleidoscope, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. I'm going to come back to those two points in just a moment, if I can, but I want to ask you a question. So oftentimes, I've said this before on previous Real Career Talks episodes, where here we are, we have an empty canvas in front of us. And oftentimes we live our life being told, no, you can't do that. Don't do that. Don't go that route. Don't go this route. And then finally that empty canvas becomes a little circle and we try to fit our way in there. When you think about career, and we're talking about being unapologetically ambitious in my career, you have the conventional way of what is ambitious, what is success. You have the unconventional way. And when you think about career development, career planning and process, for yourself, it shouldn't be restricted, as you were saying a moment ago. So did you take a conventional path? You've been quite successful. Did you take a conventional path? Did you go more than a conventional route? And what was your biggest aha moment in your career that put you on this path?
So the first part, I would say, for you, is if you're looking at the analogy of like the canvas, I would say stretch your own canvas and not necessarily just jump onto someone else's canvas, right?
I like that.
Because then you have an opportunity to frame it the way you want and not in a perceived, kind of way. Mm-hmm. There are parts of my career that were very, traditional, and then parts, the bulk was not. I graduated from Babson College in 1983. It was a very entrepreneurial school back east. It was in Wellesley, It is in Wellesley, Massachusetts. And most of the kids that were there were really focused on entrepreneurship. They wanted to go out and start their own businesses. And I thought that was fascinating, but it was not what I necessarily wanted to do. I always knew that I wanted to be in advertising. I always knew that I wanted to be a part of the communication and the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And so for me, what I also knew was that there were a lot of things that I didn't know. And I needed some of that traditional understanding about how brands thought, how brands were brought to market, how they sustained themselves. And there was a great opportunity. I had a great mentor in Roger Enrico, who at the time was the president of the Pepsi-Cola company. And it was at a time when we called it the Cola Wars, when it was Pepsi and Coke kind of battling it out, and they were the two dominant carbonated soft drinks in the business, still are. Mm-hmm. And Pepsi was really tapping into the zeitgeist of pop culture and understood youth. And so for me, I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. I could go and I can get that formal training. I started in research and then moved on to the brand groups working on the Mountain Dew and the Pepsi brand. And then they were getting engaged in entertainment marketing in a very big way. And my job kind of evolved, and this is where the unconventional part really kind of comes into play. My job evolved into doing all the big entertainment initiatives for Pepsi, like Michael Jackson and David Bowie, Tina Turner, I mean, all of the big music tours and a lot of the big celebrity initiatives. And by the way, there was a team. I was, you know, a big member of the team, but, you know, it's not like I was doing everything. So I don't want to discredit the folks that were part of that.
I get it.
But I was, you know, that was a part where I understood the brand world. I understood how the entertainment industry worked. And there was this void where a lot of people didn't know how to marry those two. And I was like, that's the area that I want to own. And that's what I did. And so that was starting the kind of unconventional part. And what ultimately ended up happening was Pepsi moved me to Los Angeles after touring with Michael and all the crew. They kind of crafted a new job for me. I did that for a number of years where I was just going out and pulling in celebrities and kind of doing the connections for these big sponsorships. And then I was like, I want to be able to do this for other brands. I don't want to just do it for Pepsi. I don't just want to be known in entertainment industry as a soft drink guy doing all these deals. So then I went out and ironically, I did a deal. My first deal outside of doing the work with PepsiCo was with AT&T.
What?
And I did AT&T at the time had a campaign called True Voice.
Yes.
And the True Voice campaign was, there was a gentleman who was at the company at the time named Dan Clark. I'd worked with him at Pepsi. He was a vice president of marketing at Pepsi and then went over to AT&T. And I remember going to the Grammy Awards and seeing Whitney Houston perform. And I used to go to the Grammys all the time for clients and things. And I remember sitting in the audience looking at her, I was like, this woman, beyond just being stunning, I mean, her voice is like, it's our generation's, like, that is our true voice.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding,
ding. I get back to the hotel. The hotel's not there. I think it's in London now. It used to be the Riga Royale. And I called in and I said, this is, you know, pre-mobile phone. So this is before AT&T mobile.
Landline.
This is old school, folks. This is landlines. I actually called on a landline.
Push button.
It could have even been rotary, but most likely it was push button. And I ended up leaving him a voicemail and then went out, you know, and the next morning he called and said, and the voicemail was basically, you've got this amazing campaign. And for those people who don't remember it, basically AT&T was bringing this incredible technology to long distance service so that it sounded a little bit more real. It didn't sound tinny. It didn't sound, you know what I mean? It just, you know, they were clear about it. And so I pitched Dan. I was like, well, why not demonstrate with one of the premier voices in the recording industry what AT&T technology looks like when she's using it, when she's not using it. And that's how I started with, that was the first deal I did outside of Pepsi. And I was so proud of it because it was fun. It was on target, strategic. It was great. And I ended up doing a lot of other projects with them as a result because they had this True Rewards program and I helped get them partners. So I do have a legacy with AT&T, which is fun.
I want you to know your wisdom and your knowledge and what you've been sharing has been phenomenal. If there was a final thought that you wanted to leave with the network audience, you know, you've shared with us, hey, turn your own kaleidoscope, you know, stretch your own canvas, you know, be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Final words that you would share with the audience, what would it be?
Well, here are three things that I think might make you should think about. One, I tell people in the career, don't back up or stand still because gridlock gets in the way of greatness, right? There is a time to yield, but that time is about listening and not lessening. And so understand that listening is not a weakness. It's actually, I think, one of the greatest strengths that people can have. Mm-hmm. And we have an obligation, or you have an obligation, to develop an ability to curate stories that reflect and respect a spectrum of people. And the more you do that, the more informed you are going to be and the better the decisions you're going to be able to make for a greater group of people.
That was phenomenal. And I want you to know, sometimes there's a drop the mic moment, and I believe that was one. I just got to tell you, I think our audience, once they receive this, they truly will receive it. Oh. Erin, I want to thank you. You've been phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
And I on this note, we're going to end, and we're looking forward to seeing everyone at the next Real Career Talk. Stay powerful. Have a great day.